This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast. I'm Louisa Evans, and I talk to my guests about the joys of sobriety and the benefits that it's brought them. We talk a bit about their story and how they got sober, but we also talk about why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm talking to Nick, who had a really interesting route to his sobriety. I'll let him tell you more about it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Could you just introduce yourself, tell the listeners a little bit about your sobriety, whatever you want to share?
Of course. Well, firstly, thanks for having me, because I think these things, these podcasts and content are so important, because I personally didn't go through a 12-step program, as I'll sort of get to it a bit later on. But it was this kind of stuff that opened my eyes to it. You know, it's when you start seeing that other people have done it and hearing the sort of struggles. I think it's important to hear some of the struggles too, but it's that stuff that kind of gets you started. So I think these are really important, these kind of conversations. Yeah, so I'm Nick Bunny. I'm a father and husband who lives in Essex. In terms of what I do now, it's very different to what I did prior to sort of starting my sober journey. And it's, I think one of the things that is also important is that a lot of listeners would think that it's a very linear journey. You just kind of go, oh, I read Annie Grace's book, or I read the Sober Rebel, and so that's it. I've stopped. And then all of a sudden you're hitting your personal bests in your running. You've got, you know, everything just sort of falls into place, and it's not that simple, as you know. So I was working in a bank in the city as a stockbroker, and I was sort of living a life that a lot of people would be, I wouldn't say jealous of, but like it looks great from the outside. You know, you don't have to worry about money so much. You go out a lot with clients and things like that. And, you know, I had the house, the car, the wife, the kids, all that kind of stuff. And you just feel a little bit like there's something missing sometimes. You know, I heard a quote that was something like, there's nothing worse than getting to the top of a ladder and realizing it's on the wrong wall. It felt a little bit like hollow, because I was just a bit like, is this really sort of what I want to be doing? And it was at that point that I started reading a lot of self-help and actually a bit of sobriety literature. That was in 2016, and obviously we're in 2024 now. And only recently, in the last year or so, have I found my place with it, you know? And so it can be quite a long journey, so it can be quite daunting. But now I've changed to a job that I love, and I'm a far happier person. So hopefully I can share with you a little bit about how I got to that place, really. When I was young, I was always kind of looking for sort of distractions. And at first that was through like eating. I used to just, oh, I'm feeling bored, I'm going to eat. Or I'm, you know, and there was a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of people that have addictions have issues with several things. It's never just the one thing. But then as soon as I was old enough to go out, just like everyone else, same childhood as probably you and everyone else that you speak to, it's the sort of teenagers getting drunk at the weekend, saving 20 quid so that you can go to a nightclub when 20 quid used to be enough to go to a nightclub, you know. And just, you're so young, you're made of like rubber bands and dreams, and you can just like bounce back from hangovers in half an hour. And so it never really felt like there was any issue with it, you know, when I was younger. And I think what the problem is that as you get older, and it's twofold really, one side, as you get older, hangovers are an absolute car crash, and they take so much from you that alcohol doesn't really replace. You know, when you're young, the fun and the enjoyment of drinking is far outweighs the side effects. Whereas as you get older, it clashes. And then eventually for me, it was just too much in one direction. But in those early 20s and stuff, everything was around alcohol. It was just the same as anyone else. I always had that kind of, I was always the last person out. I was always the first person out. You know, I didn't ever want to miss out on anything. And I spent a lot of time, being the one with one other person left at the end going, come on, let's go to the next place. Let's go to the next place. Let's go to the off license and go back to someone's flat. Let's do this kind of stuff. But I don't think that that's unusual. I don't think that's something that sort of set me apart in for my drinking. But then what I found was that when that age factor kicks in and you start having other responsibilities, drinking's quite a selfish activity, even though it's seen as this social thing. Like you see it all the time. I mean, you will have noticed every time you watch TV, everyone's just drinking all the time. You know, every TV show you watch, even in the UK, it'll be like two police officers having a conversation in an office, and one of them will pull a bottle of whiskey out of a drawer or something like that. And like, everyone comes home from work and has a glass of wine. Every meal has got like a bottle of wine on the table. And it's interesting because I'm sure some people have that kind of sort of relationship with alcohol. But for me, I only ever drank to get the effects of drinking. Maybe I was running away from something. Maybe I was, my childhood was fine, but I always had a bit of a, I was in two camps a little bit. I had divorced parents, and I went to a grammar school in a nice area, but I lived in a fairly rough area. So I was always a bit of a, people pleaser and that kind of stuff. So yeah, the drinking didn't stand out as being anything of huge concern until it started to clash with the things that I cared about more, and I think it's that authenticity element, that thing about having your ladder against the wrong wall. You can also do that psychologically, and you start making decisions when you drink and when you're hungover that if you were sober, you would look at and go, I probably made the wrong choice there. And I don't think it's always, oh, I kissed a girl I didn't want to kiss, or I did this, or I, did something illegal. It's more things like, I said I was going to go to the gym tomorrow, but I'm hungover, so I haven't. That little bit of cognitive dissonance builds up in the head. Oh, I didn't do that. So you build a storyline for yourself where you can't keep promises to yourself, because that's what alcohol does. Like it's not just about being on a park bench with a bottle of cider, and being desolate. That's what people picture an alcoholic as, and which is why I think a lot of people don't like that term. I listened to another of your podcasts, and the lady said sort of quite clearly that she identified as an alcoholic, but she knows why other people don't. And you can be someone who drinks once a week and still have a problem with alcohol, right? Because because it's your relationship, and in and a lot of the people in this in sobriety circles, like maybe yourself, and they called it spontaneously sober, don't they? They people who decide to, I mean, it's there's nothing spontaneous
I
about
was going to say, it didn't feel very
it,
spontaneous for me, I must admit.
but
I think it was
no,
about 10 years in the making.
yeah, exactly. But the idea of sort of becoming sober without a label and without sort of a recovery
Without that
program.
outside help,
Yeah, those people are the people that sort of highlighted to me that it doesn't have to be like the excess, because a lot of people I was working with, I was a stockbroker, there were people, I would use cocaine occasionally and drink maybe once or twice a week. Some of these people, it was all the time. And so when I turned around and said, oh, I was going to take a break from alcohol for the first time, they were like, I mean, I know people don't like hearing that because it kind of reflects a sort of mirror at them a little bit, but the question was always like, why? You don't drink as much as us. You don't go out as much as us. You go to the gym and all this. And it brings me back to that point. It's not about the amount you drink. It's about the side effects on your life. And when you're not showing up for your kids, when you're sitting on the sofa with your feet up with a hangover, when the kids are going, come on, let's play outside, let's play outside, you start getting that cognitive dissonance. And unfortunately, once you take a break for the first time, you open a can of worms, because you realize how much better it is to not be drinking than it is to be drinking. You start showing up for yourself, you start getting consistency, you don't miss that gym session because you went out with everyone else and had a Coke. And yeah, maybe it was a bit more difficult because you didn't want to dance or whatever else. But that glow you get the next morning when you're like, fuck, I'm up at 6 a.m., I'm out having a run, all your mates are on the WhatsApp group saying, oh, I couldn't get up, or I've just been sick and all this. And you're going, right, what's next? And your kids' eyes start to light up, because they start realizing that you're there, like you're actually in the room with them. And so, yeah, so I got to a point where I was just a bit miserable, and this led on to me delving into self-help for the first time. But the very, very first thing I did is that on my 33rd and 16 to 35th birthday is that I took 3 months off of alcohol. That was the first step in that journey.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for me, I found that to be a piece of piss, because when you know there's an ending, it's very easy to stop, because you just go, okay, 3 months, lovely. I did it, no problems at all. Everyone was like, oh, you're doing so well. Oh, this is really well done. And then that Christmas, because it's my birthday's in September, so I took a break from my birthday until Christmas. The levels of drinking at that Christmas were obscene. All I'd done is I'd taken the weekly cycle of, you know, feel a bit down at the beginning, recover, drink, and repeat week after week after week. And I'd elongated that to a 3 month period. So the binge drinking equivalent at Christmas that came after that 3 months was obscene. I drank too much and passed out on Christmas Day and I didn't remember it. We went for a meal and I was just like doing shots before we went to the meal, because I was just, you know, you're almost kind of making up for lost time. Then obviously you get after Christmas, you get to January and everyone sort of does dry Jan and things like that. And I was like, oh God. And now you're thinking, shit, now I've got this comparison of like the 3 months when I was like really keeping promises to myself and having a great time. And now where I just feel low and I feel sort of negative and my skin started to sort of go a bit crap again. And so I did a thing called the audit. And effectively, it's a questionnaire where it says things like, have you ever not kept a promise because of alcohol? Have you ever cancelled a plan because of a hangover? And you just go through it. And it's like, if you get more than three, then you should consider your drinking. And I had, you know, almost yes to every single one.
Actually, yeah. I think if you're considering that you've got a problem, if you've got that nagging idea in the back of your mind, then that means you've got a problem.
Yeah, the test should be something like, you go onto the website and it says, the fact you came onto this website means that you've got a problem with drinking.
Yeah.
Because if you have tried to moderate, you have a drink problem.
Yeah. Because
people who don't have drink problems don't need to moderate. I had friends that would, and when I was young, they would be the boring one. Oh, look at him, he doesn't do shots and everything. But it would just be like, I don't like shots. I have a few pints and I go home, or I have a glass of wine with dinner and then they're having a cup of tea afterwards. For me, it would be, well, we've started now, so we might as well finish. You know, it's like mastermind. But yeah, so then I took that first break, and then the breaks became more regular. So I'd do 3 months, then I'd come back, and then I'd do 3 months and I'd come back. And that went on for a while, and I never really had the intention to fully stop. I just had this kind of, well, I'll just wear it for that, you know, because I've got a birthday in 3 months, so I've got a holiday, so I'm going to stay sober. But really, because of the majority of my time was spent sober, you know, I would go to nights out where I'd be buzzing, I'd be on the train, I'd be thinking, I don't drink, I feel so alive, I feel so fit and healthy, I turn up, everyone's moaning about this, that, and the other, and I'm very positive. And then I'd have conversations where you 100% would have seen this. All those people that were saying to me, why are you giving up, would sort of pull you to the side and go, oh, how do you do it? Or I'd like to try that. Or, you know, how long have you done so far? And all this kind of stuff. Eventually, we got to COVID. And I had a very, really long period of sobriety at the beginning of COVID, maybe 6 months or something like that. And my wife's mother had died a few years previously, and we had a sort of ongoing legal issue. And then at some point in COVID, it was resolved, and we finally got the sort of estate sorted and that kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, do you know what? I'm going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate. We've been locked in. All I've been seeing is, I mean, and I don't know what you felt about this, but the amount of drinking that was taking place during COVID that was quite sort of blatant. Everyone was just like, well, I'm working from home, so every day I have a couple of beers while I'm working. And
it was everywhere, wasn't it?
You know, all I was seeing was people going, oh, it's £5 for a pint down the pub, and I've just bought a crate of beers for £8 and all this. And it was, everyone was drinking in their garden, and then it got sunny. And I had been training twice a day and working in a new job, and I've been getting really good really good appraisals and all that kind of stuff. And I was really, really happy with all that stuff. But it's always that old storyline is, oh, well, celebration means drinking. You know, that is, you know, that's the go-to thing. And that was when, rather than things like the hangover being the issue and I want to feel better about myself, that was when the drinking behaviour itself became a little bit more problematic. We'd be drinking too much, right? You know, and then it sort of broke into a few weeks of this. And then it was, we had some builders doing some work, and I'd be like trying to encourage them. These were the, must have been the cleanest builders you've ever met, because I was trying to get them all to have drinks on a Friday afternoon so that I could have a drink. And they weren't. They were like, oh no, it's fine, I'm driving and all this kind of stuff. And I'd still have one anyway. But I was then sort of secret drinking. So I would go to the shops to pick something up, and I'd neck a can of pre-mixed cocktail in the car before I came back. And when I'd go out with friends, I would go to buy a round of drinks at the bar, and then I would buy myself a shot in the background at the same time. And so that those little behaviors started to creep in. So I thought, oh, this is not what I wanted it to be. So then I took another break, and obviously this is going to sound repetitive, but I wanted to give an idea to your listeners of the fact that these journeys sometimes aren't instantaneous. And it's not that everyone gets to a bottom, because I don't think I really hit some sort of bottom where anything was hugely at risk, maybe. I mean, maybe you can tell me, but the idea that you just decide to stop and stop is sort of unrealistic. And if
I think
people are
it's very
listening,
rare. I really do think it's quite rare. I don't talk to many people that just decided to stop. You know, maybe they got to a point where they had to, but when you haven't got to the point where you have to because people are breathing down your neck or you have to join a program, it can be actually quite hard. What you're almost doing in those cycles of sobriety is you're lulling yourself into a false sense of security that I've got this is fine, and then you're getting that fading effect bias, that romanticizing alcohol, or I want to celebrate, and you know that's the best way to do it.
Ultimately, you're cre I'm creating like the most extreme form of moderation that there is, which is th 3 months off, 2 weeks on, 3 months off, 2 weeks on.
That's
And
exhausting. I mean, that is
it's
really
knackering,
severe.
because psychologically you start thinking, God, what, that's when you start getting quite depressed, when you, because then you don't keep promises to yourself to an extreme level. You're like, right, I'm going to stop drinking for 6 months. 3 months in, have a drink. You convince yourself it's going to, that, oh, well, we need to do this. And like you said, because no one's breathing down your neck, it's not like my wife's going, he's a heroin addict, so if I see him doing heroin, then we've got a problem. It's more a case of he's trying to be healthy. All these phrases, none of them were ever addict, alcoholic. It was always he's trying to be good. And it's that thing, isn't it? Good and bad. He's trying to be good, so that's fine. But if he turns around and says, oh, I'm gonna have a drink this weekend, then great.
There's
It's
no
not an
argument,
issue.
is there? There's no issue, there's no problem, not from the outside. And if you say as you were sort of doing secret behaviors of shots, or then people won't know. And we're actually really good.
Because I mean, the reason you keep it secret probably is because you're embarrassed, right? Because you're, because you've, especially when you've given the impression to others, because at this time, people, a lot of people that I knew, the only time they'd ever seen me, I'd be sober. And
Yeah,
so,
because it was like really short bursts of
yeah,
drinking, wasn't it?
exactly. And a lot of it was done at home, especially during COVID and everything. So, for all intents and purposes, everyone thinks you're sober, right? So then you've got this kind of, you feel like a fraud because you're telling people that you don't drink, but then you do and stuff. It's a it makes you a liar, really. And then sort of fast forward a little bit after COVID, they got to periods where that cycle, when I was having a drink, my hangovers were so extreme that I would then wake up in the morning and have a drink. And so it got to the point where, because of the fact that it's like, all right, Saturday morning, I can't ca handle this, I shouldn't have done it, almost like this kind of fuck it response, I've already had a drink. So, and then I do things like sort of fill a water bottle up, or not water bottle, but like a Coke bottle up with vodka and Coke, and then take my kids to football practice. And I'd be stood on the sidelines with the parents drinking a bottle of vodka and Coke. That's the type of behavior that people would say that's alcoholic behavior, right? And so I'd almost created that monster in myself rather than just realizing that I needed to stop. I was taking breaks and then coming back. And like you said, it was exhausting. And what really helped me was actually is that I've always had disordered eating issues. And I think they all come from the same place. This is trying to control yourself and trying to numb feelings and all that kind of stuff. And I joined a 12-step program, but for eating disorders called EDA.
Is it Eating Disorders Anonymous? Is that what it
Yeah, that's
stands
right.
for?
I label myself as someone who has an eating disorder, but who is more generally an addict. Because I mean, in even like I said to you in COVID, in that time when I wasn't drinking, I was still working out twice a day, and it was, I
Yeah.
was still getting to the point where if I missed one session, I would fit it in on Sunday morning. So instead of spending time with my kids, I'd go to the gym again. Even though it was the ninth time that week, it was like, I probably
Yeah.
could have taken a break. And so what I've realized through doing the 12-step work, because actually it's not religious at all, like I expected, and you'll have listeners that have done programs, but the fundamental is admitting that you've got a bit of a problem, and then realizing that you need to have a better perspective. And the perspective is effectively when you do everything for yourself, you become selfish and self-centered, and that's when you sort of reach for these old coping mechanisms and stuff. You need something that's more important than you,
Yeah.
and to me, that's my family, and and the kind of spirit of being alive that you get from being sober, even though it was related to eating disorders. And I've used it to sort of regulate my eating. And my eating disorder is binge eating, which is sort of, I feel a bit embarrassed sometimes to say eating disorder, even though within the groups I'm totally accepted. But you do get that impression, when people think eating disorders, they think of anorexics and people that are sort of dangerously damaging their health. But much like with alcohol, if it has an effect on your mental health and it gets in the way of you living your life, then you've got a problem. And
Yeah.
it doesn't matter if it's binge eating or only having a couple of drinks a week. The work is to look at all the things like in your backstory and childhood and how you react with people, and just being aware that, oh, sometimes I can be a bit of an arsehole in this way, or sometimes I'm like this. So that when feelings come up, you don't go to the, oh, let me have a drink to sort of feel better. You pick the next right thing. You pick the thing that serves your family better. And I know now that it doesn't serve my family to sort of binge eat and go within myself, or to secretly drink. And like, you think you're Mr. Party Man in the kitchen going, come on, kids. I cringe because I picture it now. Like, you think you're being the most fun dad ever, and you're just trying to get them up dancing. Come on, let's dance around the kitchen. Look at all this. You can stay up as late as you want. Like, you're acting like Mr. Personality, but you're not there at all. Like, I'm
No.
not there at all. And the kids know that. They can sense it. They're just like, oh, get away from me. Because of the work I'd done with the steps, I was able to kind of take a much more relaxed approach to stopping. And actually, I know that I don't need to drink to have a good personality or to be talkative. And yeah, but interestingly, even though I even did a full year once, but when I turned 40, I've still never had a sober holiday. And so that's the one thing at the moment. I've got a holiday coming in 4 weeks, and it's always all inclusive. And the first thing they say, and when you look at the all inclusive, it's like premium spirits, premium wine, and all this kind of stuff. But I'm really looking forward to not being sat by the pool telling my kids to go away and swim because I'm sleeping a hangover off. I want to actually experience the holiday. So I'm excited about that.
That's amazing. And so, do you think this is? I know we can never say never, and we don't say never, but is this an intention for you now?
Now, what's happened over the time period is that, like I said, you open Pandora's box a little bit. And now what it is I see the bad in the drinking. Before it was, drinking's all right, but sober's better. Now it's, drinking should be avoided at all costs, because if I was to die tomorrow, I wouldn't want to spend my last day hungover. So I don't want to spend any of my days hungover. It's more like that. It's more of a kind of, I've become more vehemently against the drinking.
Yeah, and I think that helps, doesn't it? When you stop glamorizing, and we put moderation on a pedestal, we put this idea that we are going to somehow achieve this holy grail of moderation and it's all going to be excellent, and alcohol's on a pedestal and we should be able to integrate it into our lives in a normal way. And it just doesn't work like that. I mean, you've only got to step back and start looking at it as a highly addictive, highly available drug that is really difficult to walk away from and to break those bonds. So the fact
Yeah,
that
and
you've
there's
done it so
no
many
shame in it.
times, no shame whatsoever. It's no more than if somebody said to me, oh, I'm smoking and I'd like to give up. I think it's amazing when people say, actually, this isn't serving me anymore.
You never know where it's going to lead, right? I mean, not that I can name them, but I know someone who's been in rehabs for drinking, and they were just this normal social person, and all it takes is sort of a damaging element of, like an event or a trauma or something.
Something
And
happening.
you don't know where you could end up. Like it
It's a
is
slippery
that.
slope, isn't it? You just
Yeah,
don't know
of
how
course.
slippery it is or where you are on it or how long it is. And you just don't know if something happens that were to pull the rug from under you. You need some good coping strategies,
Yeah, and
you
that's
know.
what it is. It's like if you've got healthy coping strategies already and you occasionally have a couple of glasses of wine, I mean, if it's not troubling you, I mean, I'd prefer to not, but if it's not troubling you, then you're not really the audience that we're talking to. Unfortunately, it's the people who say things like, oh, I've got a new rule. I have two glasses of wine on a night out and that's it, unless I have a glass of water and then I'm allowed one more glass. And you're like, who's doing this fucking maths? Like
Yeah, I mean, it's
on a night out.
mentally exhausting,
It's
you know.
knackering, and when you're drunk, that all goes out the window. It's like, you know, you just watch it all the time. You know, it's like, because we're very clever and we're very manipulative creatures, right? And my brain will get around it one way or another. You know, if I'm allowed one drink, it's going to be a quintuplet vodka and Coke. Whatever I can get away with, it's going to be that. You know, so it's actually much easier to make the decision not to drink at all because you've made the one decision rather than making hundreds. Like that decision, I don't know whether you used to have it, where it's like Wednesday lunchtime, you're thinking, right, am I busy at work tomorrow? Maybe I could have a drink tonight, but only a couple because I need to get to bed. And then you're just thinking about it, and then you have those drinks, and maybe you have a few too many, and then the next day you're like, oh, a bit hungover, maybe all the other, and you're just constantly making decision after decision after decision. And the more times you make decisions where you said you weren't, but you do. You're not acting authentically, and you end up breaking those promises to yourself. And that's the bit that really was pulling on my heartstrings because it just feels awful. And what I love is that the sober movement's obviously growing. I think there's a lot of young people don't drink. Like my kids say to me now, I don't ever want to drink, and that's fine. It's also bullshit. They will try alcohol. There's no doubt about it. But the fact that it started out like this, rather than my stepdad is an alcoholic, so booze wasn't really glamorized in the house necessarily, but I certainly was around people where the adults glamorized it to the kids. It was just like, well, go on then, you can have a little beer if you want, you can have this when you get older, and when you turn 18, we're going to go out and get you pissed. And it was the kind of parents teasing the kids because they had hangovers and stuff. I think that's fading away a bit. And when you see people like, you know, I won't name them, but there's some influencers out there who used to be like, come on, let's all get on the gear and get drunk. Ha ha ha. Look how amazing this is. And now even they're all turning around and going, actually, I've stopped that because, you know, and then now they're sort of preaching about how great it is to be sober. So, you know, hopefully, if enough people from different demographics and different lifestyles give the message, then at least people have got a bit more information than just, well, you have to have a drink.
They're starting from a different point, aren't they?
You know, when you're young and you try alcohol, for example, and it's rancid, obviously, because
It is vile.
it's the only thing that people claim to enjoy that you need, you know, 6 months of practice at before you start liking
That is
it.
so true. I keep saying I do not like the taste of alcohol, and people go, "Oh, I love a Chardonnay." I'm like, "You don't.
Yeah,
You
I mean,
really
yeah,
don't."
there's some alcohols that you know, they're so heavily sugared. There's nothing for me that's more flavoursome in the alcohol world, like a cherry Pepsi Max is. You know,
Yeah.
I can't think of, or that like a fresh glass of orange juice at, like sat by a pool.
Yeah. Or a
I
cup of
can't,
tea. I mean,
like,
you cannot beat a cup of tea.
obviously, I still work in a stockbroking industry, and you see some of the money that gets spent on nights out and stuff. And people are spending, you know, hundreds of pounds on bottles of tequila because it's got a certain label on it. Like, tequila is absolute, it doesn't matter what one it
I've
is, it's
never had it. Is that the one with the
rancid.
worm in the bottle?
Traditionally, yeah, but there's things like Don Julio, which is this like really expensive thing. It's like $200 a shot and stuff, and people are doing it to show off, and it literally tastes like sort of drain
It's a
killer.
total status symbol, isn't it?
It TV doesn't really help because, like I said, like we were shocked. I said to my wife the other day, I think we were watching, I don't know what it was. I think it was Kin or one of these kind of sort of dramas on BBC, and it was like every single scene was in a bar with people drinking. In the kitchen with the family having a glass of wine, or in a sort of like man-to-man discussion, like with a shot of whiskey, you know. And
Yeah.
then even when you were seeing it from the police's perspective, they're having a shot of whiskey while they discuss the case, or you know, drinking a bottle of wine while they're sort of like working through the numbers. And I was just like, honestly, if I sat there and drank a bottle of wine while I was like working on a case, like everyone would just get away with the murders because I would. There's no way that I'd be focused. I wouldn't be focused. I'd be going, oh, well, we'll do that in a minute. Let's talk about my new business idea. Let's have you seen this music video? I'd just be sat doing that till 2 in the morning, and then the chief inspector would be like, how have you got on? And I'd be like, I don't
They
know.
got away with
They
it.
got away with it.
And the weird thing is that these things, when you think that this is actually scripted, written, the set is staged. So decisions actually are actively being made. I know what this scene needs is for them to reach into that drawer and get whiskey out. There's a reason for it. Why? I mean, it just puzzles me now because I look at it and think that's adding nothing to the storyline whatsoever.
I mean, if they're in a pub, I get it, right? But sometimes what I don't get is that I've worked in stockbroking and investment banking for about close to 20 years, and I can't think of a single instance where sort of senior people having a serious conversation are pulling out a bottle of whiskey. I've never seen it, right? But
No.
obviously I've seen stockbrokers go out at lunch and get drunk and come back, but that's not very glamorous because they come back to the office and fall asleep at their desk. A bit
It
silly.
is a bit
But
weird, really, as cultures go. We do encourage it a lot in really strange ways.
I remember when they banned drinking on the London Underground, and that was about, I think it was about 20 years ago. And the first thing everyone did, because they said, right, as of this Friday, you can't drink on the tube. Everyone just went and started partying on the tube. That was the first response. So we went out on we took a day off from studying on a sort of Thursday or something. And we all just got on the tube and just with bags and bags of booze and just stayed on it the whole day. Everyone was just getting off, getting on the next line, coming back, getting on the next thing, going around the circle line,
Told you can't do something. That's it. We're going to do
and
it more.
yeah, and I think prior to that, I'd never drank on the tube anyway. So it's not like I was having some of it important taken away from me. But culturally, I just think it's maybe taken a step back, and it's certainly people like you and others who help that. And I think that the bit of the culture that I think that you fall into or fell into when you were drinking is that kind of mum's at home having a glass of wine.
Yeah.
The amount of things we've got in our cupboards that are like a placemat that says Prosecco Queen of Hockley, or it's 5 o'clock somewhere, or all this kind of trash. And it's like,
And birthday cards and little, as you say, placemats, mugs, glasses.
it's so hard to get a funny a birthday card that doesn't suggest that everyone's pissed.
So let's talk about, because I asked my guests on here to talk about three things that have changed for them in sobriety. So you've
Yes.
obviously done a lot of sober time over these last 8 years. So what has shifted for you?
Well, I've got some honourable mentions. One feeds the other. I've said sort out my eating disorder because I wouldn't have even really discovered it in that way without taking a break from alcohol. I've put things that a lot of people will say, like get in shape, better sleep, be proud of yourself, meet different people. That's a really big one because when you stop drinking, every social event doesn't have to be in the pub, and so
Yeah.
everything doesn't have to be what's the nearest bar. I've so many times not done something because there isn't access to booze. So even if someone said, oh, let's go paintballing, have they got a bar there? No. Right, so we're gonna have to spend the whole day paintballing, then we'll have to drive somewhere, get changed before we can go out. Okay, well, how about we just go to the pub? Yeah, okay, we'll do that. So it's things like that. And I've written get addicted to Pepsi Max, which is the other honourable mention. But I think I'll start with the most serious one, which is to deal with issues head on.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I found has helped me build the most resilience of character, and it's the biggest character shift, is that we all know that feeling, and I don't think we do it intentionally all the time, but when I first noticed my alcohol was a problem was when my mother-in-law died because she was living with us. There was an ongoing legal battle. My wife was distraught. I hated my job. And that was the first time I ever used alcohol, right? And so when I say used alcohol, I mean we would turn around and say, we've had a shit day. I'm getting drunk, right? And so
Yeah.
I was also like doing a little bit more coke than I was doing previously. I mean, a little bit more. I mean, the way that people talk about using drugs is hilarious, because it's like, oh, it's only a little bit of coke, yeah. But the reason I laugh is because I'm describing that as though if it's a little bit, it's fine. I mean, it's obviously like illegal and everything else. But these are all coping strategies that are broken. They're crap coping strategies, because kicking the can down the road or kicking it into the long grass or whatever you want to call it, all it does is amplify the problem. Yeah. And so that problem that you've got where, oh, you didn't quite have enough money for your electricity bill, so you had to use your credit card, that problem does not get better with a hangover. And so I started to deal with things head on. And at that point, you have to actually start being realistic about what your expectations are, things like boundaries. The first thing that comes is that you sort of start realizing that you have to deal with problems. And then that's where the sort of my approach came in a little bit, is that you start having to let go of some stuff, because one of the real issues we all have is that we think we've got loads and loads and loads of issues. Loads of those things are out of our control, or they're in our past, or they're in the future, or they're other people's opinions, or whatever they are, and we can't control them. But rather than rationally assess them and say, right, well, actually, I can let go of a lot of that stuff, we just allow it to build up on us, and then we just blur it away with alcohol. So for me, that was one of the biggest things that came out in terms of a character shift.
And what an amazing shift as well.
It's life changing, because it's your whole perspective is changed then, isn't it? Because you start taking accountability, because now you're the one who has to deal with the stuff, and actually, what you realize is a lot of the things we worry about aren't as bad as we think they are. And there's a lot of, either we can't control them, in which case you've got to let them go. And I know that we're not stoic sages. We are going to worry about what people think about us. These things do happen. But when you've got slightly better coping strategies, like, well, okay, well, maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong, but I've got to let that go for a bit, then it just sort of builds up a little bit of, I don't know, like I said, resilience or character. Yeah, it's a big one. But like I said, the problems maybe aren't even as big as you thought, because actually your anxiety drops, because firstly, you haven't got this kind of deprived dopamine level, because you're just constantly swinging out of drinking and not drinking. But you're steady and calm, and you're a little bit rational. I know it sounds boring, and I know that if you've got any 20-year-old listeners, they're going, fucking hell, that sounds shit. It's, I think happiness is about being content. It's not about massive peaks and massive troughs. It's about trying to keep a sort of level of confidence and quiet contentment, and I think that's what came from taking account of my own actions, I think.
And that emotional resilience actually is a core to good mental health. Because anxiety builds when we think that something terrible is going to happen and we won't be able to cope. But when you actually can calmly assess that, do you know what? I would, even in the worst situation, you would surprise yourself with your coping skills. But they're a heck of a lot better sober. You're more rational, you've got clarity, you've got time and patience. And so, whatever goes on, you're in a better place to deal with it.
Exactly. And the amount of times me and my wife would sit down and go, right, on Sunday, we're going to do a dreams board, and we're going to talk about all the dreams we've got, and how we're going to get there and everything else. And you're like, yeah, high five, let's have a drink. And then Sunday, it's like, scrap that, I just want to watch Made in Chelsea all day, or whatever it is. You just, all of a sudden, your motivation levels drop, and it just builds up this kind of feeling that something isn't quite right, I think.
So, what is your second thing?
So my second, I've sworn already a few times, so I'll use my version of what the title was, which was, I'm less of a prick, is what I've said. But I mean, my wife might not agree, but what I mean there is a bit what I was talking about earlier on. It's that kind of, I now connect with people authentically, and so I'm not playing the jester. I mean, I still do crack a lot of jokes, and I can be a bit sarcastic and stuff, but I connect with people. I ask people how they are, and I mean it. I have a conversation with someone, and I want to hear their bit, and I check in with people who I haven't checked in with a while, because I know that they're having a problem. So I sort of double check, and I'm present for my kids. I'm not telling them to just go away because I'm hungover, or dragging them to the pub so that they can sit in a beer garden on their iPad board so that I can get drunk, and then I kind of frame it as a family day or something like that. You know, I'm getting involved, I'm helping my son record a video, I'm helping my daughter do her artwork and her homework. You know, my son passes 11 plus and he's going to a grammar school, and I was available to do work with him, you know, to do his work, you know. And you might think, well, I do. A lot of people might be thinking, well, I do that as a parent. But a majority of people I talk to will say something along the lines of, oh, so hungover, oh God, I couldn't do that, or I couldn't do this, or and even if they don't think it's related to alcohol, when people say things like, oh, I couldn't be bothered to do something with the kids, or I couldn't, or they were showing me this thing, but I just didn't get it. It's not that you didn't get it. You're an adult and they're children. Yeah. It's not that you didn't get it. It's because that's the easy option. And I was an asshole who would take the easy option because I was always a bit jaded and I was always a bit selfish and I was always a bit in my head. And this isn't a when's the next drink coming? Yeah. This isn't a sort of, yeah, people might flip it for this kind of alcoholic tendency of kind of like, where am I getting my next drink? Like I'm a heroin addict. It's not that. It's the after effect of drink. It's very selfish. You know, that
Yeah.
we had a first birthday party for my son 10 years ago. The excess of that party in terms of, you know, the amount of booze, the amount of people, the amount of it. We said it was a celebration because he was 1 year old, right? But he was in bed for most of it, and then he was in bed in the evening. And everyone just stayed until 4 or 5 in the morning getting drunk. You know, that's not for him, is it? You
No.
know, that's for me, you know, and that's where we can be quite selfish. So, you know, I've said here that I'm less grumpy, I'm more proud of myself, I make more time. And then obviously I've written here there were nights where I was a knob. You know, you create a lot of time and that time can be used better. If I was to use the family-friendly version, I would say I'm more connected to people, and in particularly my family.
Something you've said has really resonated with me today, and that
Yeah.
is drinking is sold as being sociable and all these different things, which we know, but actually it's inherently selfish. And it's that absolute contradiction. And it's really just clicked in my brain how selfish drinking is.
It's very sick. I've had therapy for years, and I had therapy around eating disorders before I started using the STEP program. But effectively, it's not really God-based or powerlessness and all this kind of stuff. It's exactly what we just said there, right? It's stopping yourself from being self-centered and being outwardly focused on the world. And we've all been in that situation where you've got that choice between getting the kids home from the pub so they can have a good night's sleep and be happy the next day, and staying a little bit later so you can have another drink. And we'll all dress it up as, didn't we have a fun night last night, kids? But it is selfish. You know, it is a selfish, it's, you know, a group of people out drinking is just a group of people being self-centered. Like, we all act like we're in it for each other, but people end up having fights and wandering off and pulling people and going to pick up drugs or doing this and that. Yeah, it's not. You know,
It's
there's
not the
so many
sociable
nights.
thing, is it, that the, it's
No.
being painted as?
No.
You know, thank you for putting it like that, that selfishness. And that's not having a dig at people that can, as we say, that can moderate or have a drink, and that's not really relevant to them. But when you're going and you're drinking and you are in your own head, even sat at home watching Coronation Street or something, you know, and having my glass of wine and then the next glass of wine, and that's not me thinking about anybody else bar me and me drinking my wine. Even if I have made sure the kids are in bed and everybody's been fed and everybody's happy, I'm still being very self-centered at that point.
The other selfish thing is that often we cancel plans the next day. Like I've had situations where I was meant to take the kids to football training and I've gone, oh, but let's not do that today. Kids, do you want a duvet day? Do you want to stay indoors? You know, and you try and convince them that it's their idea.
Yeah, with
And
a few leading questions and a kind
exactly
of a
right.
nod. Would you rather have a film?
Would you rather eat loads of chocolate and have a film? So that one's a bit of a standout one. So yeah, being a little bit less selfish is definitely a consequence of not drinking.
What about your third thing?
It's twofold. One, it's a shameless plug of my book, and the other side is that I really think one of the best things that comes out of sobriety is the taking back those lost hours and the kind of productivity that you can get out of it. Like you've already mentioned three careers to me that you currently have. And so
That is actually true.
the point there is that you've got the time for them now, right?
Yeah.
And so I wrote an article for the Sober Edit about productivity and about how, you take back those kind of lost hours. And so my third one is, I never would have written my book if I hadn't been sober. And the fact that doing something that you sort of dreamed of doing gives you purpose and brings you happiness just as it is, a lot of us say, oh, I don't have the time for that, or when would I fit that in, or oh, that's all right for them because they do this or do that, but we've all got that ability. We can all do these kind of things. And if you want to learn a language or play piano or write a book or get fit or any of those things, you could do a really fair assessment of your week and think to yourself, if I took booze out, what could I sort of take back? And what I found was is I could take back an extra hour in the morning. I could probably take an extra hour in the evening. I would take my son to clubs, and then while he was doing his club, I would be writing and not sat there hungover, or in the worst case, sat there with a drink. I was sat there doing that. And when you have the clarity that comes with not drinking, you have these moments where you go, oh, I've got 4 hours this afternoon free. And the hungover you says, I'm going to sit on the sofa. Even when you say you're not hungover, if you've drank within the last week, you're not going to be at 100%, even if you think you are. And that's going to influence your choices. And those choices might be, oh, let's get a takeaway, or let's do this. But you get this kind of buzz when you're sober because you think, oh, well, I can do anything. So in those 4 hours, why don't I write for 2 hours? That's what started to happen for me. And so when I started the self-help and the sobriety stuff, I took loads of notes full of all the quotes that I'd found that I liked and all of the little things, and I'd be rereading it and stuff like that. And over time, I realized that it's all well and good knowing this stuff, but you actually have to do it.
Yeah,
You have
you've got
to
to apply the knowledge.
philosophy is action, and like you can't just know it. I mean, it that timed quite well with my relapse during COVID, because it was a case of I was literally quite braggadocious and I was a bit smug and thought I knew everything. And my dad used to say to me when I was young that empty cans make the most noise. And I realized quite quickly that I didn't have any tools. I just had loads of sort of knowledge that I wasn't really applying. And so I started looking for ways to sort of make some techniques myself to put these things together. And this stuff does relate quite well to sort of this sober movement, even if the book itself isn't about sobriety, because the things that were paramount, the things that appeared in everything, whether it was Stoic philosophy from 2000 years ago, or a recent scientific study, or a really interesting meme, or some literature or a magazine article, that they all pointed to similar things. And those things were authenticity, which we spoke about a bit earlier on, balance, consistency, and discipline. And the things when you stop drinking, the authenticity and the consistency are the two things that sort of pick up the most, I would say.
Yeah, and the
But
discipline
I,
and the
yeah, I suppose,
balance, you know, actually,
yeah.
I
I
would
mean, I
say they
suppose
all
it all
do,
does,
really.
yeah. I suppose in some ways you might think balance is more about balancing when you drink and when you don't drink, but I suppose taking the drink away allows you to balance all your other values together rather than sort of obliterating them with drinking. I found all those things, and so what I did was I started to write them down into a framework for myself. And because I'm a bit obsessive, I got to the point where I'd written 90,000 words or something like that, and I was like, right, so this might actually be a book rather than just a sort of couple of bullet points for myself. And again, the confidence that comes from being sober allows you to go, well, actually, well, why not? Why shouldn't I be the one that writes a book?
Yeah.
It's not a case of, oh, writing books for authors, I'm not an author. It was just, well, fuck it. What could go wrong? And then and because I had all those extra hours, I could research how to publish it, how to edit it, what stages you need to follow to produce the book. And yeah, it's doing really well. And since then, I've started my Instagram account. I've ended up working with some charities, like even this t-shirt I'm wearing now is a donates money to Mind, the mental health charity.
Yeah.
All of these things I never would have done, all these sort of experiences and these conversations with people I never would have had, including speaking to you. So
It
none of
opens
that
doors,
happened.
doesn't it? I mean, it really is. It just opens doors. I know that one of my friends actually said to me, and she sort of said it tongue in cheek, it was, I wonder what you'd be or who you'd be if you weren't drinking. Now, well, she wasn't referring to the fact I was drinking every day or drinking, drinking, because I never drank like from morning to night or anything like that. But she was just, I just wonder who you'd be, what you'd achieve if you didn't drink. Because alcohol was always my, I think, my get out of jail free card for my busy mind, which I'm since realizing is neurodivergent. I would use alcohol to slow me down in the evening and then give me the excuse to flake the next day. And so I would always sell myself short, and I knew I was selling myself short, and that was heartbreaking. And that's when, like you say, you take alcohol out of it and you go, right, now I did, there is a moment of sheer panic, isn't there, where you just go, okay, now I have got 4 hours in front of me. What the hell am I going to do with it? Because my brain likes to be busy. And that's when you have to say, okay, well, what, make a list. Make a list of those things you've always wanted to do. Like you say, for some, it could be playing the piano. It could be learning a language. It could be learning to run, like I am at the moment, which you'd think you'd know how to run, but apparently
Yeah,
it's
but
not that
apparently you don't.
simple.
Yeah, no, I know people that have read books and books and books on the gait and the how what type of shoe you need to have and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, I've got the trainers, but I mean, they cost enough, like they should run it themselves.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, so I'm still working on it. I'm icing my knees and all sorts of different things. But it's kind of, I'm learning these things, and I've gone, what do I fancy next? What do I, and I'm studying my master's now in psychology, and it's like, and sometimes I look and I think, why am I doing all of this stuff? And then I think, why not? I've got this time. And yes, it's still a push, but it's no more of a push than juggling real life and drinking.
Yeah, I mean that's the spirit of being alive, isn't it? You know that's the reason we're here. The reason we've got that kind of cognitive ability over animals and stuff like that. Well, not the reason, but it's come about because of our intelligence and our aptitude. And so it's just a waste to not use it. And again, for people who are listening, who are thinking, well, it's all right for them because they're doing this. You know, that could be just being the best parent that you can be and showing up for your work. And instead of being falling asleep on the train home like knackered all the time, you just feel a bit fresher. It could just be like an uptick in your life, a tiny amount. And it's interesting you said about neurodivergence, but I think this happens to a lot of people with addiction issues, is that I got diagnosed with OCD in my when I was 40. And I didn't realize that my whole life, when I'd been counting every mouthful of drink I'd ever drank and all these other sort of tics that I had going on, the only time I'd fully relax, especially around my family, would be if I was drinking, you know. And if I wasn't drinking, I'd be like wired, like, why isn't this being done? Like, we've got a plan, this. And like you said, it's almost like the alcohol would turn that off.
OCD is awful. It really is. I think it gets a lot of lightning in.
Well, because people put a TV remote straight on the table and they go,
Yeah, and
oh,
they go,
that's
oh,
my
I'm
OCD.
OCD. Yeah, or I've got, oh, I have to pair all my socks properly. That is not OCD. I would love to have that
That's
because my
tidiness.
drawers are a nightmare. I don't give a damn what's behind a cupboard
No.
door. I don't give a damn about tidiness or cleanliness. It's not that. It's intrusive thoughts or needing to plan, needing to organize, needing to feel control. And then, like, as you say, working through that step program must have helped you as well. It's like, that's out of my control. But when it first sort of manifested for me in my late teens with an eating disorder at the same time, I would check locks. I would sometimes wouldn't leave the house. I mean, I would think that everybody hated me. I would imagine that I'd done horrible things.
OCD is one of those things where, you know, I think the classic thing is the person who turns the light switch on and off 100 times and stuff like that. And though it can manifest like that, I think more commonly, or certainly for me, it is the intrusive thoughts, and they will go along with what the storyline is. And the storyline for me is, you're not good enough, you're fat, you need to drink. You know, I would do things like go into a room, notice that there's a shirt in there that I haven't worn for a while, and then I'd blink and it'd be 40 minutes later. And I've just been in my head going, right, so if next Wednesday I do this, then on the Friday I could wear that blue shirt. And then I'm trying to fit it into, like, plan it. And I'd reiterate plans to my whole family that we've already had this. My wife would be looking at me like, we've had this conversation. And I'm going, yeah, but I'm just making sure that you get it, because in my head, the fear that that plan doesn't happen is a nightmare. And so then when I drink, it'd be the only time that me and not the only time, but we'd be the most relaxed together, because it would numb it off. And what I realized is there's nothing actually, OCD in itself is a bit of a superpower, because it can make you quick-witted and funny and organized and everything else. but it's about steering it. You know, if you just
Yeah.
drink to numb it and then take the drink away, you just brrr back again, right?
Yeah,
It's about
exactly.
focusing it into something else. So now I can use that to organize da 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 da.
It is a superpower, and I think neurodivergence and OCD, they are really debilitating. I remember sitting and not wanting to leave the house on my birthday the one night because I just could not bear the exhaustion of having to check that everything was off, so I take pictures. And I think for me, I've learned a lot of coping strategies to deal with a lot of it. So if I know that just before I leave the house, my husband knows and my kids know, I will start to feel my stress levels rise. But I'm still aware of it. Drinking was the off switch. You're right. It was the absolute overthinker's off switch.
Exactly. And when you give yourself a bit of time and a bit of work, I mean, you mentioned that discipline probably applies too, but you do actually have to do the work a little bit. And some people don't like to hear that. I suppose some people would hope you could just turn it off. But whatever method you take, whether it's 12 steps or these types of sort of more holistic approaches, there's still some work involved. You still actually
Yeah.
have to sit and face some uncomfortable truths and reasonably assess yourself and understand that you actually have some part to play in this, you know, and that life can be better without it. But yeah, so that's my last one is writing the book.
Well, that's excellent. I think it's those achievements, well done for sitting down, finding the time in your day and channeling your energy towards it. It's amazing, and it's so amazing how organically it came about, that it was just from wanting to almost consolidate your learning.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Yeah.
that's phenomenal. I just Well, thank you so much for joining me. It has been
That's not at all.
such
It's been a
an
pleasure.
interesting conversation. I think we've got a lot in common.
Yeah, I when you said, well, when I started to show signs in my early 20s, along with an eating disorder, I was like, this is like separated at birth stuff. Yeah, I've had a great time. Thank you very much.
So thank you, Nick, for taking the time to talk to me. The links will be in the show notes for Nick's book and to his Instagram profile if you'd like to find out more. And of course, as always, you can head to louisaevans.com, where you can find lots of useful links to my audiobook and where you can learn more about working with me if you'd like some support. I hope you have a lovely day. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.